Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to Africa Link. It is Thursday, the 10th of May. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
With me, Jane Ayeko-Kumet. This program comes to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany.
Coming up, at least 47 people are killed as a dam bursts in Kenya, with the number of casualties expected to rise.
260,200 people are displaced and not in their homes because of water levels. Networks have been destroyed and many areas are inaccessible even as we talk now.
And could Zimbabwe's former First Lady Grace Mugabe still face legal charges over assault of a South African model?
They would be able to extradite Ms. Mugabe back into South Africa to have her appear in court. If that doesn't happen, we will apply for a private prosecution and we will institute private prosecution.
Well, we have a lot lined up for you, but before that, let's first listen to what has been happening around the world.
My name is Jane Nyinge with DW News. We start off in Kenya, where the death toll from flooding caused by a burst dam near the northern western town of Nakuru has risen to over 45. Witnesses said most of the victims were asleep when the incident occurred. Weeks of torrential rain in Kenya has led to flooding and mudslides that have killed more than 100 people. Interior Minister Fred Matiang'i told journalists over 40 people have been rescued so far.
The search and recovery process is going on. We have a huge team comprising the Kenya Police, the Red Cross, and a number of volunteers who are working to help us establish in total the losses that we have incurred. I am afraid we may have lost probably more lives.
There have been international calls for restraint after Iran and Israel carried out direct attacks on each other's targets. Israel says it was responding to an Iranian rocket attack on Israeli outpost in the Golan Heights launched from Syria. It claims to have struck nearly all of Iran's infrastructure in Syria. The confrontation follows the U.S. decision to quit the Iran nuclear deal. Now, health officials in the Democratic Republic of Congo are racing against time to contain an Ebola outbreak after five more cases were reported today in the northwestern town of Bikoro. The disease has killed so far 17 people. The World Health Organization has released $1 million from its emergency fund to respond to the outbreak. The UN agency is leading the response and has sent experts to the affected areas. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. French President Emmanuel Macron has been honored with the prestigious Charlemagne Prize awarded to individuals for their special effort to promote European unity. While accepting the prize at a ceremony in Germany, Macron repeated his call for a more ambitious European budget, stating that the time for strengthening Europe is now.
L'Europe a besoin qu'on la célèbre.
Europe does not only need celebrations. Europe needs concrete projects. Europe needs a future and counts on its youth. What I expect of you is that you become my ambassadors for the further development of the European project.
Je compte sur vous et merci infiniment pour votre accueil.
President Donald Trump has welcomed back to the U.S. three American captives released by North Korea. They were released as a gesture of goodwill ahead of the U.S. planned summit with North Korea. And Mahathir Mohamad created history today when he took the oath of office as the Prime Minister of Malaysia for the second time at the age of 92. He now becomes Malaysia's seventh Prime Minister after leading the opposition alliance to election victory. For more news and information, please visit our website dw.com or our Facebook page DW Africa. My name is Jane Nyinge.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link program with me, Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. Thank you for joining us live on air and on Facebook, DW Africa. Feel free to take part in the program by sharing your thoughts and opinions on the stories we are covering. And today we start in Kenya, where at least 47 people have died after a dam burst its banks in Solai, Nakuru, 190 kilometers from the capital, Nairobi. The dam burst following heavy rains that have continued to hit the country the past 2 months. The police say almost an entire village was swept away by silt and water from the dam, with the death toll expected to rise.
Now, close to 40 people have been rescued in operations by Kenya Red Cross in Nakuru Community County Disaster Management teams. The area has 7 dams used by a commercial farm. More in this report by James Shimanyula.
The deafening sound of water surging from the burst dam in Solai, Nakuru. Eyewitnesses say walls of the water reservoir located on top of a hill collapsed, causing flood waters that swept everything on its way, including power lines, homes and people. Down the hill, homeless people counting their losses mingled with the rescuers as heavy trucks cleared the massive rubble. The disaster happened when Festus Kitonga, an official from Kenya's Disaster and Emergency Response Unit, was visiting an area east of the capital, Nairobi, where the wall of its dam had also collapsed.
I received a call that the river was swelling, and within an hour, the surge from the river brought down the wall, and as a result, that entire river came into a compound. The construction of the dam that is here, at the point when the contractor evacuated the debris that was holding back the water, the entire river surged, and that's what caused the wall to come down.
The Kenya Red Cross says the number of those displaced by floods is on the rise. Chief of the country's branch of the International Committee of the Red Cross, Abbas Gulet.
260,200 people are displaced and not in their homes because of water levels. Networks have been destroyed and many areas are inaccessible even as we talk now. There are a lot of areas that cannot go by road, so either improvise by having boats or having to go by air, by chopper to land there. At least out of the 47 counties, 32 counties have been affected. So you could see the extent, the enormity of the challenge that we have here.
Kenya has been hit by heavy rains in the last 2 months, usually accompanied by heavy thunderstorms and lightning.
James Shimanyula sent that report. It's very unfortunate what's happening in Kenya, but good enough, the responsible authorities are doing everything they can to rescue humanity there. Elsewhere in the world, French President Emmanuel Macron has called the U.S. decision to leave the Iran nuclear deal a mistake. Speaking in an exclusive interview with DW, Macron said he is for an expanded deal with Tehran.
He spoke to DW's Max Hoffman, and as he starts to explain why he failed to save the Iran deal during his recent visit to Washington.
Je crois que le plus important c'est de maintenir la stabilité et la paix au Proche et Moyen-Orient.
I think the most important thing is to maintain stability and peace in the Middle East. In Washington, and I've said this before, I'd understood that President Trump wanted to leave the 2015 agreement. During our joint press conference, I suggested instead that we work on a broader framework. I'm very sorry about his decision. I think it is a mistake. This is why we Europeans reiterated that we remain in the 2015 agreement, as I reminded President Rouhani. We negotiated and signed this agreement, and it allows us to control the nuclear defense activity in Iran until 2025. I think this was meant to go beyond, to something broader. This is what we have to do among European countries, with the EU, with the UK, Germany and France. We have to reaffirm that we are attached to the 2015 agreement because the Iranian regime must not restart its activities.
You're saying that the Europeans are going to try to remain in the agreement, but what is it worth without the United States?
This is going to be our focus in the coming weeks and months, and it's the mandate we gave our foreign ministers in the EU and in Iran. It's the agreement that we signed. Is everything over now because one of the signatories withdraws, but the others are reaffirming that they're committed? I think, in any event, it's a pity, because we anticipated and we can now regret his decision. But it is important that we all remain absolutely focused on stability and peace in the region.
La stabilité et le maintien de la paix dans cette région du Moyen-Orient.
French President Emmanuel Macron, that is a story developing in Europe, from a nuclear deal to an oil deal in Africa and the AfriForum and others application against, to Zimbabwe, the AfriForum and others application against last year's decision by the South African government to grant diplomatic immunity to former First Lady of Zimbabwe, Grace Mugabe, was heard at the High Court in Pretoria today. Grace Mugabe allegedly assaulted a South African model, Gabriela Engels, with an electric cord after she found her in the company of her two sons in their hotel room in Johannesburg. Now, the groups that went to court want the court to declare that diplomatic immunity invalid to pave way for Mugabe's prosecution. Tuso Kumalu reports from Pretoria.
During the application, lawyers representing AfriForum, the Democratic Alliance Party, Freedom Under Law, and the Commission of Gender Equality argued before Judge Valley that the Minister of International Relations erred in granting Grace Mugabe immunity. One after the other, legal representatives of the group told the court that the South African laws have no provision for spouses of heads of state to be granted immunity. The AfriForum went further to pray to the court to give an order clarifying whether the immunity, if it was correctly granted, does it still exist, since Mrs. Mugabe is no longer the First Lady of Zimbabwe. AfriForum prosecutor Herinel said once the immunity in question is declared invalid, the process of bringing Mugabe to justice will commence.
They would be able to extradite Mr. Mugabe back into South Africa to have her appear in court. If that doesn't happen, we will apply for a private prosecution and we will institute private prosecution.
Gabriela Engels, who was also in court accompanied by her mother, said she will not have peace until Grace Mugabe is punished for assaulting her.
I'm okay. I'm feeling positive. I don't hate her. I forgave her for what she did to me, but I still feel like justice needs to be served. Then I'll get her to court, hopefully, and she can apologize. Because I feel like in her eyes, she still doesn't see that what she did to me was wrong, and I wasn't even doing anything wrong.
The Commission of Gender Equality also joined the court as friends of the court. Zanele Ngwane is the Gauteng provincial manager for the commission.
Violence against women in South Africa is very, very high. We need to make sure that we use the criminal justice to curb this violence. So we need to make sure that we follow this case, and we want the justice to take its course. If we can get this case to go through, we will be teaching others a lesson.
The state was represented by three advocates. In its arguments, the state lawyers insisted that the minister was within her powers to recognize the immunity that Mrs. Mugabe had as the wife of a head of state. Grace Mugabe was not represented at this stage.
Tuso Kumalu sent that report from South Africa. Now, she was granted immunity when she was the first lady, and she is no longer first lady, and those accusing her wanted to be removed. We asked our followers, what do you think? Should she be prosecuted? And you have been sending in your opinions.
Yes, Jane, as you would expect, we have a lot of feedback on that. Sophia Heritage said, no one should be above the law because of some nonsense called immunity. Let her be pursued and prosecuted if found guilty.
Interesting opinion from Sophia Heritage there. Chaba Bokaye says, let her be. Give them a little peace. Why on earth must you prosecute her after her husband agreed to hand over power peacefully? What else do you want from them? An interesting one there.
Yeah, but someone has got another opinion. And Girel Laverage says, prosecute her. When they are in power, they think they are superhuman.
Those are interesting comments there. And that's all we have time for now. Keep them coming. We shall certainly read them as and when we can.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back once again. My name is Jane Ayeko Kumet.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura, also welcoming our Facebook listeners on DW Africa. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, we will hear about people who are changing stereotypes about dwarfism in Kenya.
We are raising standards above height. As you can see, we are short, but now our standards are high, above our height. We people, we are short, but we are tall in our minds.
I like the spirit in those voices. And we shall also be hearing tales of young people leaving the Somali capital, Mogadishu. But first, the court case on illegal oil deals against Eni and Shell oil companies operating in Nigeria is due to take off after previous delays. The illegal oil deal surrounding the purchase of what is called OPL 245 oil fields was considered to be one of the biggest corruption scandals that ever happened in Nigeria's oil industry. Our correspondent in the Niger Delta, Mohammed Bello, sent us this report.
Nigeria's Eni and Shell are accused of handing out bribes during the 2011 purchase of OPL 245, an offshore oil block estimated to hold 9 billion barrels of crude oil for $1.3 billion. A probe revealed that large money from the proceeds of the deal ended up in the hands of top politicians that include former Nigeria's President Goodluck Jonathan. Ahmed Umar is a Port Harcourt-based financial consultant.
We need to go back to the basics. Where are we getting this thing wrong? Government should stop allocating oil blocks to individuals. This asset belongs to entire Nigeria. Government should manage this thing for the benefit of all Nigerians.
The investigation findings further show that the block, which Shell and Eni valued at up to $3 billion, was given away for just $1.3 billion, leaving Nigeria to receive only $210 million, which was less than 5% of the actual value. The incident left many Nigerians wondering where the rest of the money ended. Here are some of the people I spoke to ahead of the resumption of the trial on May 14th in Italy.
Ordinarily, we shouldn't have been sustained as what it is today. To this moment, I called on EFCC to resume their investigation in order to feed the court in Milan on what is happening.
One Chioma John also viewed the resumption of the Milan Malabo court case as a good thing.
At least they are trying to curb corruption in Nigeria. And I think whoever is involved should face the full wrath of the law.
You see, the oil we are talking about is an issue concerning the Niger Delta and the issue concerning the benefit of the people of Nigeria. So if prominent Nigerians are involved in corrupt practice, I think the law should take control.
As documents show, some money allegedly was deposited at the bank account of Malabo Oil Company, a firm belonging to a former Minister of Oil, Dan Etete, and various intermediaries, including former President Goodluck Jonathan. Dan Etete was a minister under Nigeria's former head of state, Sani Abacha, who appropriated the oil block in 1998 and later sold it to Malabo, resulting in major litigation. The federal government of Nigeria under President Muhammadu Buhari, whose three-point agenda included fighting corruption headlong, has described the Malabo oil deal as corrupt and a conspiracy to harm Nigeria. The nine influential Nigerians whose names were mentioned in the Malabo oil scandal include Dan Etete, Mohammed Abacha, Desani Alison Madueke, and Mohammed Bello Adoke. Others were Austin Oniwon, Bayo Ojo, Edmund Dokoro, and two former Nigeria's presidents, Olusegun Obasanjo and Dr. Goodluck Ebele Jonathan.
Mohammed Bello sent us that report from the Niger Delta, as people there waiting to hear what happens in Italy next week.
Yeah, we did ask, will justice finally be served? And the opinions are varied. Abdul Mun Sani says this is why the current government under the leadership of Buhari is doing everything possible to cleanse the country of the endemic corruption of the past administration.
And he goes on to say, bless Nigeria. Some interesting comments there. There are those who think Buhari is not doing enough, and there are those who think he's doing enough. Dan Alarama says, going by the ideology of the current political dispensation here in Nigeria, we are hoping something can be done so as to bring those involved into book. And Ahamuza Isaac says, oil in countries without strong institutions benefits few people at the expense of the masses. History has proven this.
And Ifanyeka Mandanagu says Nigeria is a dictatorship government. They're the reason for the spilling, destroying the so-called Niger Delta. So very varied opinions.
Yes, indeed. Keep those comments coming.
speaking out.
Dwarfism, or people with short stature, is not uncommon in many countries. Wherever they may be, these people experience some sort of discrimination in schools, public places, as well as in the job market. Stereotypes such as weird, incapable, and childlike are often associated to dwarfism.
Well, in Kenya, people with this condition have defied these stereotypes. They have formed a football team, the Lion Stars. They're working hard not just to take part in the international games, but also to prove their ability. The Lion Stars are using football to combat stigmatization. Andrew Wasike met the team as they trained for their upcoming game in the 8th edition of the World Dwarf Games in Michigan, Washington. Take a listen.
They say that the world was made for people at least above 5 feet. Otherwise, you will have problems not only working, navigating, but also socializing with people. So, what happens if you are not above 5 feet?
Kenya!
Yes, you can!
Well, here at the Nairobi City Stadium, people of short stature are busy training, preparing for a friendly match. Their team, the Lion Stars Football, the first of its kind in the country, will on Tuesday face Harlequins in Nairobi. Emmanuel Karani is the coach. He tells me that they might be short, but they have amazing talent.
We have started training for the World Dwarf Games early. We want to bring back home victory. This is also a means of raising awareness, as not many people are aware that people living with dwarfism can play football. They just see them as short people, but they are very talented.
34-year-old Mariga Jeremiah, one of the team members, tells me that from a very early age he realized that others see and treat him not only as being physically different, but as a person of lower social status and identity. He says that through football he has been able to raise the standards of short stature people.
We are raising standards above height. As you can see, we are short, but now our standards are high, above our height. We people, we are short, but we are tall in our minds, and we are capable of doing everything they can think of.
Philip Dawood, the National Secretary General of the Short Stature Society of Kenya, told me their main goal.
It have really fought stigma. It have really fought discrimination. It have created that awareness. People are coming to realize, oh, we knew these people only in acting or in music. But now, so they can do different things. So there is football for people who are short. All those categories, it's only that they are short, but they can do greater things.
I asked Dawood whether they use the same equipment as those allocated to people not living with dwarfism.
We use a different field. Our field is smaller. The ball is, we use size 4. Even the posts of the goalkeeper, they are smaller, and the height is smaller. So everything of ours is different than the normal football.
Football has been used to connect countries, people and races. Here at the City Stadium, it is being used to fight for equality so that people living with dwarfism are not only recognized as people too, but also have a fair share of employment opportunities in Kenya. Working together on the football pitch has given the short stature people immense courage and strength to face life in a way that they will never have thought. Among the challenges the team is facing right now is not having proper funding. Most of the team players are forced to dig into their pockets to support the team. Some players play barefooted for lack of having proper sports gear.
Very interesting report there by Andrew Wasike. Yeah, ability. Our ability is above our height. Isn't that very good inspiration?
I like what that man said. We might be short, but our minds are not short. We have tall minds.
Very interesting there. I mean, talk about it. And many times we tend to judge the book by its cover. But I like these people. I like the spirit. As he said, we can do great things. I can only wish them the best of luck when they face the teams in US.
News on.
Somalia has for decades been involved in a civil war since the overthrow of the military regime of President Siad Barre in 1991, which has had devastating effects on the economy and the young people. The youth are in fact the most affected, since they make up 70% of the country's population of 15 million.
Now, there are fears that this has been forgotten and Lot is easily lured, and the many young people are easily lured into militias and criminal gangs like Al-Shabaab. However, as the country takes a recovery path from Al-Shabaab insurgency, a section of the youth believe they can and they are able to play a big role in national development. Frank Iga was in Mogadishu and filed this report.
It's been a case of mixed fortunes for most of the young people in Somalia. 24-year-old Ahmed Abdul just returned from Uganda, where he was studying civil engineering. Abdul says he wants to play his part in rebuilding his country.
The Somali youth are now active and participate in Somali development and Somali reconstruction. We may no longer need to go to abroad for education. We have a lot of universities now, though the capacity and the quality is not as well as other countries. So we are moving on.
But for some like Leila Muhammad, the country's future still remains uncertain. Leila says her family members are still living abroad due to the poor economy and insecurity.
The hope I have is like 30%. Shall we get the good Somalia which was before me here, or we end up our lives war and this endless conflict? I'm always worried for the future of this country.
In Selijale village, young people are quickly developing their capabilities and talent through the Quick Impact Project by AMISOM UPDF. One of the organizers, Fred Muhumuza, says the response has been overwhelming.
So when you leave them redundant, then you are giving a chance to Al-Shabaab to take them. So in all our military coordination, we make sure that our target are the youth, so that we engage them, we make them busy, develop their talents.
In Maraka town, on the shores of Indian Ocean, the situation is not any better. Poverty, high youth unemployment and fear of Al-Shabaab attacks continue to haunt the locals. Ismail Abdallah is breaking rocks to reconstruct his house, which was destroyed during the attacks.
My work is hard, but I do every day. I want to get some money, to speed my house. The people of the Maraka, to building is a broken Al-Shabaab. We know that, and we see Al-Shabaab a problem in Maraka.
However, not all hope is lost. Amashido, a real estate and hotel businessman in Mogadishu, believes the future is bright for Somalia.
Every day things has changed. Big improvement. People are coming back. They are rebuilding their houses. A lot of big buildings are coming. You can see it yourself. And employment and universities. A lot of hospitals opening. And the businesses are booming. Better than for the last 3 years. 100%. And I think next 4, 5, 6 years, they will lead in East Africa.
They will lead in East Africa. That's the opinion of those people there in Mogadishu. And Frank Iga sent us that report.
And Jane, we have also been following up on our Facebook page about Nigerian businessman Mogul and Africa's richest man, Alhaji Aliko Dangote, who is 61 and was the only Nigerian to make the 75 most powerful people in 2018, according to a list released by Forbes. We did ask, how have Dangote's businesses helped you as an African? And of course, the feedback is overwhelming.
Yeah, somebody who goes by the name Duke says, yes, you can be 66th position when you are given monopoly on rice, cement and other businesses in a corrupt nation called Nigeria. That's his opinion, though, not ours.
Dan Alarama says his businesses have been helping a lot in Africa, ranging from employment opportunity to many Africans and provision of basic things to our doorstep, such as foodstuff and cement, for an affordable price.
Again, very interesting and varying opinions there. But this one coming in from Ayo Christian says, as a Nigerian, I feel the man is clearly afraid of competition.
Austin B. Taylor actually thinks we need 1,000 more Dangotes in sub-Saharan Africa.
Interesting comments there. We certainly can't read all of them, but we do appreciate your presence. Keep it to Africa Link from me, Jane Ayeko Kumet.
And me, Zipporah Nyambura.
That's all we have time for. Have a nice time.